you doing sitting on your can with a garden full of vegetables and no real plan? So get off your duff and take a stand. It's time for you to can. Clean your pressure cooker good. It's time for you to can some food. If you don't grow veggies, don't be blue. There's a farmer's market close to you. Tomatoes.
What do pickles, berry jelly, and green tomato pie filling all have in common? They're all preserved. We will learn how to preserve the taste of summer this hour with a master food preserver. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I tried to make Concord grape jelly a few years ago, but I failed miserably. At least the jars didn't pop, indicating that they were not properly sealed, and I didn't want to kill anybody. I have been afraid to attempt this again, but I hope to get some encouragement this hour. Do you can? Do you make jams and jellies and tomato sauce? How about pickles or pickled veggies like asparagus or Brussels sprouts? Ever try making sauerkraut? So why go through the effort? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Christina Ward. She is a certified master food preserver for Milwaukee County, who offers preservation classes through the Milwaukee Recreation Department. She is also the author of the book, Preservation, The Art and Science of Canning, Fermentation, and Dehydration. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm looking forward to getting some encouragement to try this again. You told me on my Facebook page that I can. Really?
You sure you can do it. It's really a matter of just understanding some of the concepts behind the science behind what's happening in the jar and in your canning pot. And once you understand that, then you won't have that fear that something's gone so horribly wrong, because you'll know what you're looking for and you know what you need to do.
Yeah, so we'll get into some specifics a little bit later. But in general, why do you think people in general should learn food preservation skills?
Well, besides having a viable skill when the zombie apocalypse comes, it's always a fun food project. So you can come to it from the idea of you're growing your garden and you've got a bumper crop of something. It's a good way to extend that harvest. Farmers markets, your gardens, the neighbors. There's abundance of fruit trees growing from past generations that essentially just lay fallow because people aren't aware of how they can preserve that food from the neighbor's apple tree. So there's some basic reasons to just keep doing it, and as well as then there's the health reasons. You can have full control over all the ingredients you put in a jam or a pickle versus something that is commercially processed.
Yeah, but as I asked in the introduction, is it worth the effort? It's a lot of work, isn't it?
It can be a lot of work. I always suggest in classes that it's a great community activity with friends and neighbors, the old saying, many hands make light work. And so a few people in a few hours can actually make a fair amount of preserves for a couple of families. The other thing that we find in teaching classes is folks come to it, they realize it's a lot of work, and then they really appreciate it when someone gifts them a jar of pickles or they find items for sale at the local farmer's market. They realize the amount of work that goes into it.
It's my favorite gift in the world, that when people give it to me.
Because you know exactly how hard it is.
Yeah, I'm going to even give a shout out to, and maybe she's listening now, Leona Whitman makes the best sauerkraut I have ever had. And she made a batch of using red cabbage, and boy, was that ever good. And my friend Joni Cooksdorf makes the best. She makes a great salsa, tomato sauce, or spaghetti sauce, and she pickles asparagus, and what a treat that is, too. So I do have friends that know how to do this, and what I should do is I should go hang out with them some afternoon, right?
Absolutely. Hang out, watch what they're doing, learn a little bit, share a glass of wine or two, and it makes for a really nice Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, and you have classes, I know, coming up, and we'll post some of those on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, but I see you have one coming up, I believe it's in Madison, in at the end of this month.
Correct. On the 29th of July, that Saturday afternoon towards the end of the market, I'll be at the Kitchen Gallery, and we'll be doing some quick demos and explanations and classes on some basic preservation techniques. I'll be in Chicago tomorrow night. And then up in Minneapolis, I think, before on the 27th of July.
Yeah. So what are the first questions people new to preserving food ask you?
Am I going to die?
Yeah.
And that's actually a good question to ask, because unlike cooking, where you'll know if something's going off the rails, it's burnt, it tastes funny, you added too much salt. With canning, the danger is a pathogen, a microbe, a bacteria that could cause some serious illness. And some of the worst of them, of course, is you can't smell them, you can't taste them, and you can't see them. And we're talking about botulism. And so people rightfully so have that a little bit of fear. But again, if you understand what's going on and how something's prepared, you don't have to worry about it. And that's where the classes or working with somebody who has some expertise in doing it, like your friend, it helps gain confidence for you making it, because you know exactly what's happening.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the science here. Why didn't my jars pop when I made that Concord grape jelly? You know what? I don't even know if it was jelly or jam. But in any case, why didn't they pop?
If it was juice, it was jelly. If there's some fruit pulp in it, then it's jam.
All right, there's fruit pulp in it, yeah.
Right, the taxonomy, the hierarchy of how that works. A lot of times folks will have that misperception of you that you need to hear a pop. And the pop is just a kind of a nice effect. What you're actually looking for in a sealed jar is that the lid dips down in a little bit. If you look at an unsealed jar, it has what we usually refer to as the button. Mm-hmm. And if you press it, it has give. It goes up and down. And if after you processed it and you just touch it after it's cooled, and if that lid is tight as a drum, no give it whatsoever, it is sealed. Even if it didn't pop, it's still sealed.
Well, that's good to know. And I did see that I had some that did and some that didn't. So I'm wondering, is there a reason why that might happen?
Yes. And so to walk through the basic troubleshooting, you go back to your own processes of, did you wipe the rim of the actual jar before you put the lid on?
Probably not.
And so that's like, even a couple granules of sugar is enough to interfere with the seal. So something like that. You have to make sure that you're doing your processing time for the prescribed in the recipe, the right amount of time. If you're under processing, sometimes then those jars might not seal, especially if you have some that do and some that don't, then you get hot spots in a pot. So those are the two basic troubleshooting off the top of my head, I would say, for your batch of jam that didn't quite work out.
Yeah. Can you kind of just walk through the process of making a jam?
So there's a couple things happening when you're making a jam to kind of think about. First is the science of you're preserving the food. And so the preservation action that's happening is what we're doing is we're taking water away. And so by taking water away from that food, then there's nothing left for microbes. And that's how we do that with sugar. And so that sugar, and we actually then do it with acid, a little acidification, and that's the addition of lemon juice. So that is the thing that helps preserve the food. And so whether that's a jam or a syrup, and there you'll see, a sugar syrup over fruit is a form of preservation, we've extended the life of your grapes. The second part of that is the addition of a pectin. A pectin is a natural fruit fiber. Some fruits have a lot of it, like, say, apples, oranges have a lot of pectin. And when it reacts with heat, it makes things thick. And so we've added a lot of sugar to help take the water out, and we can add in a little pectin, either by adding some apples or a commercial powdered pectin, and that makes it thick. Those are the two things that essentially happen to make a jam.
Yeah. We have just a couple of, or not even a minute, before a news break. What steps do we take to keep ourselves safe?
The real quick steps are cleanliness, first and foremost. You don't have to worry about any pathogens getting in the jar if you've prevented them from getting in there in the first place. So make sure everything is really clean. Hot, soapy water is the secret. You don't have to worry about boiling things like jars or sterilizing, hot soapy water is your friend. And then after that, it's about following the steps of making sure you're using it enough of the acidifier, a lemon juice, the sugar, and as well as then processing in a hot water bath or a steam canner, now approved thanks to the state of Wisconsin's microbiological and food preservation department. They've done all that testing.
We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll get into more of the specifics of canning, fermentation, and dehydration. And we will welcome your questions for our guest, Christina Ward, who is a certified master food preserver for Milwaukee County. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org.
What are you doing sitting on your can with a carton full of vegetables and no real plan? So get off your dump and take a stand. It's time for you to can.
Laying around home with the ball game on, feeling fairly fine. Blackberry jam is cooking in the pan, and the jam and the cook are mine.
So are you planning on making some jams or jellies this summer to preserve them for the fall and winter? We are talking about preservation this hour with the author of Preservation, the Art and Science of Canning, Fermentation, and Dehydration. And we're welcoming your questions for Christina Ward, who is a certified master food preserver for Milwaukee County. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Tell us if you can or preserve in some other way and why you like to do this, or maybe you have some questions to make sure you are doing it safely. You can also post a question on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Jerry on Facebook says, my first attempt at making grape jam was a boon to our Orioles. At least they were happy. My planned Christmas gifts of grape jam made with grapes from my mom's vines was a fail. It was so runny. Any idea why? Christina?
I do have some ideas why. First of all, anybody who encounters that process of when it's such a heartbreaking thing, is you work so hard to make a jelly or a jam and it doesn't set. First of all, it's syrup. It's safe. It's delicious. It's a delicious syrup. Hmm. So don't throw it away. You can still use that. And a lot of times people do, when they're making a jam or a jelly, a lot of instructions will forget something I think is really critical, is to test it to make sure that you have a set. And so you go through the effort, you're making that jelly, and then they pour it in the jars, process it, and then it doesn't set up. But if you just take about 5-10 minutes out of that process and pour a little bit into a small dish, let it cool completely, run your finger through it, and if it's solid, if it's of a jelly consistency, you know it's going to set up in the jars. And if it doesn't set up, you have an opportunity to kind of do a little fixing to get it to set. But if you just pour it in the jars before you test it, it's a mystery. You won't know, and that's really sad. So first thing I recommend to everybody is test your set before you put it in a jar, because then you can fix it. And a lot of it is the science of, did you get to that set point, whether adding pectin or just using the high temperature to boil something down to get it thickened. So those would be the two troubleshooting methods I'd recommend for Jerry.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about preserving something that might be in season right now. I understand cherries are in season now. Are you working on some cherry preserves?
I am. Walnut Way, which is a great local urban garden here in Milwaukee, they're harvesting their cherry trees right now. So I had 25 pounds of cherries.
Wow.
It's so wonderful. The fresh, red, ripe, tart cherries. So what I'll be making out of those is cherry pie filling. And making a pie filling, a canned pie filling, is a great pantry staple. There's nothing like having that ready to go. You put it in a quart jar, and that's enough to fill about an 8-9-inch pie plate, and just make cherry pie anytime. All the work is done.
So can you run us through turning cherries into cherry pie filling?
Yeah, absolutely. The hardest part with cherries is pitting them. So you do have to take the time to pit them. And, you know, if anybody takes a look at you, you'll look like Sweeney Todd, covered with cherry juice. Mm-hmm. But pit them all. Make sure that you're putting them in a little cold, acidified with lemon juice water as you're through pitting them. They do oxidize. Sometimes folks get a little nervous because they kind of will take on a brown color. They're okay. They're just oxidizing. So get them into a little bit of lemon water right away. And then it's a very simple process of cooking the cherries down with sugar and then adding a very specific ingredient called clear gel. Clear gel is a super modified type of pectin, cornstarch, that is produced by the Center for Home Food Preservation. And it's really the only thing that is safe and recommended for use for making pie fillings. And it's easy to get online, very easy to get. So you add that to your cooked sugar cherry mixture, along with any spicing you may want to add. And that produces a beautiful, clear, jewel-like, thick pie filling. And you put it in the jar, you process that in your canner for about 25 minutes, and you've got pie filling for about a year to 18 months.
Oh, and I love cherry pie, so that sounds delicious.
It's great. I mean, not only cherry pie, put a little bit on a pound cake, vanilla custard with cherry pie filling, and it's going to be better than any kind of canned pie filling that you could possibly get.
Yeah. There are also savory options for cherries. You suggest a cranberry mustard in the book. You replace the cranberries with cherries?
Yes. The cherries add a lovely tart sweetness to it, and it's cherries are really versatile that way. You can cherry barbecue sauce, cherry mustard. Again, you get the nice sweet, a little sweetness of cherries, the bite of mustard, a little sourness. It's delicious. And mustards are super easy to make. When we talk about mustard in class, I always tell people the first secret of making mustard is don't tell people how easy this is, because then they won't be so impressed when you give them homemade mustard.
We are talking about the art and science of canning, fermentation, and dehydration with Christina Ward, who is the author of Preservation. She is a master food preserver for Milwaukee County. She offers preservation classes, and she is offering advice to you this hour. Do you have questions about how to safely and effectively preserve the fruits of your labor, your garden, or for that matter, the farmer's market? 1-800-642-1234. We do have an open line for you. If you have questions about doing this, or if you need some encouragement, or maybe you have a mistake you'd like to share, and we'll see if we can correct that. And I'd love to know if you have a specialty. What do you like to preserve, and why do you go through the effort of preserving? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Gary on Facebook says, I recently found some beef jerky that I made with my dehydrator in the bottom of one of my backpacks. It must have been at least 5 years old. Oh, goodness. It didn't look or smell funny, so I ate it, and it was still fine. I dry apples regularly, and I prefer them to fresh ones. So would that jerky 5 years later still be okay, do you think, Christina?
Well, I'm not sure of the condition of his backpack, but my rule of thumb and the general recommendation is about 12 months to 18 months is your optimum preservation time. And, you know, keep stock, keep an inventory so you're rotating whatever you have preserved. And, you know, unless you're starving, I wouldn't recommend eating items that old.
I don't think I would.
It comes back to our zombie apocalypse. Good.
Well, he survived, though. But
he did.
Yeah, so what is that's what you need to dehydrate is a dehydrator, and that's it?
A dehydrator is a great tool because, it circulates air, and it keeps a consistent low temperature. But you can do it with your oven, especially for beef jerkies, which require, you know, about a 160, 155, 60 degree temperature. And you could do it for fruits. But it's a little trickier because many modern ovens don't go below 170. You can do it. It's a great project for kids, not on a day like today, but you can purchase or make sun dehydrating kits. And so it's something you could do out in the sun, and which is, of course, food drying is one of the oldest methods of preservation. It goes back to, you know, as people first walked the earth, they started drying foods.
Yeah. So they just, do you think they did this, this was a happy mistake, or how did we discover that we could preserve foods?
That's a really interesting question that food historians are still working and researching, because, you know, a lot of it becomes happy accidents, but then why do we continue eating something like lutefisk?
Right. Oh, my God. I don't know why anybody eats lutefisk, but no.
Right. So we go into some of, like, so you get dried foods and some of that makes more sense. But then when you get to some of the fermented foods, you're like, it's a very much an acquired taste for some of the kind of cultural specialties.
Yeah, that's right. But and you do talk about the history of preservation, and there were some mistakes way back when, weren't there?
There absolutely were mistakes, and that comes as we, you know, move forward in time. Science is always doing the research, but sometimes it takes, you know, culturally us time to catch up to where the science is. So something like pressure canning, for example, which is something that will, a method to preserve low in acid foods like potatoes or meats. The actual pressure canner had been invented in, say, the 1600s, but the germ theory, our understanding that microbes that caused illness didn't really come about until the 1800s.
Oh.
So, you know, there's a lot of folks that it was really common to have illnesses and foodborne illnesses and death from food during that kind of prior to the modern era, which would be really honestly post World War I.
We have some callers for Christina Ward, who is author of Preservation: The Art and Science of Canning, Fermentation, and Dehydration. And we have an open line for you, too. If you have a question or an experience you'd like to share, a specialty, what do you like to can, or what do you like to get from a friend who cans, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Would you try this, or do you do this? Ed in McFarland is with us. Hi, Ed.
Hello. My question is, so when I make strawberry jam, the fruit ends up in the top 2 inches, and then the bottom is clear. I mean, it sets, but it's not consistent. You know, the mushed up fruit that you end up with should be consistently distributed kind of throughout, you know, the jar, and it always rises to the top and sits up there. When I open a jar, I got to mix it all up, and when you get in the store, it's all, you know, consistently spread throughout your jam. Do you understand the question?
I do.
I sure do, yeah. It's in the canning world, they refer to that as float. You've got some fruit float going on. And I can answer your question. There's a scientific reason that's happening. So if we think about sugar is heavier than the fruit material. And so if you're not cooking the jam long enough, and if you're not doing your full cook time, is then the fruit doesn't become fully imbued with the sugar. And so it's always going to rise to the top a little bit. And that's okay. I mean, if you're submitting your jars for, like, say, state fair judging, they'll mark you down if you've got some float. But it does not affect the preservation, the safety, or the quality of your jam. So you can, one, rest assured, it's safe. You should enjoy it. Just stir it around. And the other part of your question about commercial jams is they add in a lot of extra ingredients to make sure that there's a consistent kind of flavor, feel, and, you know, appearance of their jams. And so that's what they're doing to make it look the way it does and not get the float that home canners often get.
Thanks, Ed, for the call. Let's go to Diane in Mercer now. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Hi.
Yes, go ahead, Diane.
I can, like, hot peppers, pickle them, actually, with the vinegar.
Oh, wow.
And then when you put them in a hot water bath, they get mushy and soft. They're not like the peppercinis you buy at the store.
And you want them to be firmer than that?
Yes.
Yeah, so is there some way to do that, Christina?
There's absolutely a way to do that. So my just without looking at you, I'm or looking at what you're doing in your kitchen, there's two things that I would recommend. One, make sure that you've got the freshest peppers you possibly can. That makes a huge difference, even with any type of pickles. Cucumber pickles, your ideal is if you can walk to the garden or to the market, get them, and then start processing them right away. That's number one. And two, I would be concerned that you're over-processing them. Pickled items, especially if you're doing like a pickled pepper, they don't need a lot of time. So how long are you processing them for in the canner?
Whatever the directions say, like 7 minutes, I think it is. If it's a smaller jar, and I think it was like 12 or something minutes if it's a quart jar.
Yeah, so I would actually go, so the quart jar, that's a big jar for little peppers. So you might actually be better off going down a size in jar so you can get a low, you don't have to process as long. Make sure you're using a safe and tested recipe. That processing time seems a little long to me. And the other thing is the kind of that you have to adjust the expectation just a little bit, is that if you're looking for that super crisp finish, like say in a Vlasic pickle, that kind of crunchiness, then you'll want to make a refrigerator pickle versus a processed pickle. And that's pickled peppers, pickled anything. If you're going to process it, it's always going to be a little softer than it would be if you just put it in the refrigerator.
So that's all you do is you do everything the same, but instead of putting it into a hot water bath, you put it in the refrigerator?
Exactly. All food preservation is really not, you know, is about extending the life of something. And so you can use that same pickling solution with your peppers, and if you put them in the refrigerator, you'll get about 3 months of use out of them. Now, and again, if you process them, you'll get about 12 months to 18 months. So always think about what is your end use. How do you want to eat that food?
I want to eat it quickly and crisper, so I think I'll do the refrigerator once, yeah.
And that would be the right choice.
Yeah. And so you can help us make Milwaukee dill pickles. Those are famous.
They are. Milwaukee dills, it's very funny. We don't realize that here in southeastern Wisconsin, especially with our heavy German and Polish influence, is that we have a regional cuisine. And our pickles are very different than if you go on to the East Coast or the West Coast. And it has a lot to do with the spicing. We use clove and a lot of mustard in our and turmeric in our pickling spice blend. And so that's really the secret, is by using that type of pickling blend with lots of dill and garlic in the jar, that's how we make them in Milwaukee, and you'll get that great Milwaukee pickle taste.
And do you use the baby dills?
A full-grown dill, fresh. And a lot of times if you go to the market and ask for pickling dill, the farmers will know exactly what you're looking for, and you'll take that whole beautiful big head, the flower of the dill, and put that right in the bottom of the jar.
We will check news again from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will talk more about preserving our foods. And we'll welcome your questions for our guest, Christina Ward, who is a certified master food preserver for Milwaukee County, and she is the author of the book Preservation, The Art and Science of Canning, Fermentation, and Dehydration. We've talked some about canning and dehydration, not so much about fermentation, and we'll talk more about that. Maybe we'll make some sauerkraut or other fermented foods when we come back. And again, welcome your questions and your own experiences. Tell us why you like to preserve your foods, or tell us why you're intimidated at the thought of preserving your own foods. We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Tomatoes, potatoes, beans and corn, sauerkraut and pickles, and I'll be darned. You can even can sausage and sugar beets. Ain't summertime sweet. What are you doing sitting on your can?
Now if you've only listened to what you speak about, I'm going for to tell you how to make that sauerkraut. The crowd is not made of leather, everyone supposes, but of that little plant what they calls the cabbage roses. Sauerkraut is bully, I told you it is fine. Methinks
so do you make your own sauerkraut? We'll talk about how we can do that and welcome more of your questions about preserving foods for our guest, Christina Ward, a certified master food preserver for Milwaukee County and author of Preservation, the Art and Science of Canning, Fermentation, and Dehydration. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So it is summer and bratwurst season, and of course that sauerkraut goes well on the bratwurst. Talk a little bit, you know, we've been talking about the science a lot, Christina, but we should maybe talk about the art and culture of this too. This is something that our grandparents did and well beyond.
Absolutely, and then it was a matter of survival. You needed to know these skills, especially in Wisconsin, where we're very much a farming, rural, agrarian culture. And so these were the things that you needed to do to get through the winter. And as well as we've got such a great food history based on our just so many immigrants coming to Wisconsin. So you get foods like a sauerkraut, which, you know, is essentially a food staple here in Wisconsin, but not as familiar in other places.
Right.
And so it's great, and it's one of the easiest fermented foods to make. So, and people are very excited about fermented foods these days because of some of the probiotic health benefits.
Yeah, that's right. It's really I don't want to call it a craze, but we have Fermentation Fest, and everybody is trying to do that because it is good for our guts, apparently.
Yeah, I'll be at Fermentation Fest this year. Essentially teaching people, it's really fun, a traditional old-style fermented Polish pickles. But the same kind of ideas with sauerkraut, and we think of fermentation, it's really what you're doing is you're a bacterial farmer. You're essentially creating an environment to make the good bacteria come in. And how I explain it when I'm teaching kids is the poop of lactobacillus bacteria is lactic acid.
Of course it is.
Right. So and again, it comes down to, again, we're changing the environment of the food to make it inhospitable to pathogens, to bad bacteria, but to microbes. So the lactobacillus produces the lactic acid that gives it the sauerkraut a sour taste, but it also extends the life and the usability of that food. And it's so simple. Cabbage and salt. Cabbage and salt are the only ingredients in sauerkraut.
Oh my gosh. So what is your go-to process then for creating sauerkraut?
I think that one of the steps that's really indicative of German style, you know, or Eastern German style, that, you know, Western Poland sauerkraut, is kraut pounding. And any time I teach it, I was at the museum for their food exhibit. We're talking about sauerkraut. So many people had memories of grandparents with this giant wooden stick and a big crock, you know, the cement crocks, the stoneware crocks, pounding and pounding and pounding their chopped up cabbage. And that's really the secret to making good sauerkraut, is by physically breaking down the cell walls of the cabbage. It helps the salt penetrate, and it helps attract that lactobacillus bacteria that's ambient, that just lives everywhere in our environment.
Yeah, so what are some other, you mentioned you can make fermented pickles. Is that different? How is that different than a regular pickle?
It's funny. It tastes different than what we're used to as a pickle. My daughter went to college on the East Coast and had a pickle, and she spit it out because, again, they make more fermented style pickles. And so, again, it's using a salt with more water and some spicing, and, again, letting that lactobacillus bacteria come into the food and do its job and ferment. And essentially, like, fermenting is that action of producing the lactic acid. And so it creates a pickle, you know, as we call it, a pickle, that it tastes a lot, where they're often referred to as like half sours or Jewish pickles sometimes. And so a little different than our vinegar pickling solution pickles.
Yeah, speaking of pickling, and the are there other, you can pickle other vegetables besides cucumbers. I mentioned earlier in the hour, my friend makes pickled asparagus spears, and those are great in Bloody Marys.
You know, that's a good rule of thumb. If you think it tastes good in a Bloody Mary, you can pickle it.
Brussels sprouts, then.
Brussels sprouts are great. Even pickled carrots, believe it or not. Pickled carrots are delicious. Here in Wisconsin, with our brewing tradition, there's some, you can pickle hops. Yeah, pickled hops are great in a Bloody Mary.
The science of the pickling is what? Vinegar? What is it?
It's essential. It's acidification. So vinegar is acetic acid. We're talking about fermentation is about creating acid, and that's a lactic acid. So what we're really doing, it's about changing the environment so that the microbes don't want to move in. And so it goes into, I saw a question on Facebook as well. So germs, microbes, bacteria, they all have, just like us, we want a preferred temperature range, a preferred acidity range. We need, that's usually referred to as a pH, the pH measure. They need oxygen, they need moisture. And so if we erect barriers, so if we throw up, think of it as in a chase movie, if we throw a chair to the germs, the bad guy, to block their path, to impede their progress, we essentially extend the life of our food. So acidifying something, it slows those germs down.
Brianne Chasso, my producer, mentioned just now that she ordered a cheese board at a restaurant recently that had a spicy pickled pineapple on it, and she says it was wonderful. Never in a million years would I think of a spicy pickled pineapple. Any tips for pickling fruit? Same thing?
Pickling fruit is great, and pickled pineapple is something we do in class a lot, and there's a recipe in the book for it, because you can, a pickling solution, you can make it both savory and sweet. And so pickled fruit is lovely, because if you use sugar with a cider vinegar and other spices, you've got that great, what the chefs refer to as the umami, that you've got sweet and sour, maybe a little salty, all of those tastes in one bite.
So we have a lot of people who are on Facebook are calling in. A listener who couldn't stay with us had a follow-up call about floating fruit when making jam or jelly. Mm-hmm. She wondered if it would help if you sprinkle strawberries with sugar before adding them to the cooking process.
That's actually referred to as maceration. And if you look at the French tradition of jam making, that's what they do. And so in Alsace and in France, what they do is they take the fruit, they cover it with the sugar, and they put it in the fridge for 24 hours to let that sugar penetrate fully. And that does help reduce some of the fruit bloat.
Jim on Facebook says, don't forget that some foods like potatoes, squash, onions, garlic don't need fancy preservation, but can simply be stored under the right conditions. Also, cabbage and apples can be stored in a root cellar, and with some attention during the season, a picnic ice chest can be in your root cellar. If you watch the temperature inside it and move it to keep the temperature within the needed range. Well, how about that idea for preservation, Christina?
Well, again, that will extend the life, because we were talking about erecting barriers, and temperature is one of them. Microbes have a preferred temperature range. So if you make it too cold or too hot, they are not going to want to move into your food. That's the essence of why we have a refrigerator, why you have a freezer. Those are all methods of preserving your food. And again, using a root cellaring method is about creating that environment that lowers the temperature enough to keep it so the germs don't move in.
Well, this is really all very fascinating, and I'm feeling a little bit more confident about doing this again. But here we are talking about all of these different methods. How do you know what method you should use with a certain food?
I think it goes back a little bit to you have to think about, how do you want to eat that food, and what's your favorite way? If you want your asparagus to be something that you're going to put later in a salad, well, then you need to just refrigerate it so it's as fresh as possible. If you're thinking about Bloody Marys, then mm-hmm. try pickling it. And it's also about environment. Some folks, if you're, say, in far remote, or you're living off the grid, you may not have reliable electrical service. So then canning things so it's shelf stable may make more sense to you. For folks who don't have a lot of freezer space, then canning things may make more sense. As well as then you think about kids and snacks and things. How do you want to eat that food? Fruit snacks and homemade dehydrated fruits are a really healthy snack and a great way to preserve food as well, that, again, shelf stable for a short amount of time.
You know, we have only a couple minutes left. I meant to ask you about how this is so good, too. At the end of the season, sometimes we lose our tomatoes or even green tomatoes to a first frost. And you have a recipe for green tomato pie filling. Where did this idea come from?
Green tomato pie filling is a great historic Wisconsin kind of came up with the African-American diaspora. And so this is originated in the South and came up with the African-American immigrants coming to work in factories in the 1920s and 30s. And that idea, again, to use up those green tomatoes. And it's really a variation on almost like a mincemeat. No actual meat in it, so it's a vegetarian recipe. But using up those green tomatoes so nothing goes to waste, because, again, if you put that much effort into growing something, you sure don't want to waste it.
No. So a minute to go for maybe a final pep talk as to why any of us might give preservation a try.
One, it's fun, it's tasty, and it's really about connecting back to your food. When you make homemade grape jelly from your grandmother's, your mother's grapevines, or the something apple jelly or applesauce from the tree in your backyard, it gives you a real satisfaction of knowing that you're connected back to the land, your own land, and that you have that skill, that you grew it, and you were able to preserve that and enjoy that food in February when it's cold, and all you want is some fresh fruit, and that's about as fresh as you can get.
Yeah, so you're making your cherry pie filling these days. What's next?
Looking forward to the cucumbers coming. My husband is good Milwaukee Polish, and he's already talking about we use his grandma Wanda's Polish crock recipe for pickles, and so he's already getting excited about pickles.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting excited about this, too. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Christina Ward, Certified Master Food Preserver in Milwaukee County, author of Preservation, the Art and Science of Canning, Fermentation, and Dehydration. I'm Joy Cardine. Thanks to Brianne Shasso for producing the program. This is the Ideas Network.
What are you doing sitting on your can with a carton full of vegetables and no real plan? So get off your dump and take a stand. It's time for you to can.